It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Security is more important to me than trade. So we're going to have a strong border. Oh, we're going to have a closed border.
Closing down the border would have potentially catastrophic economic impact on our country.
There's $1.5 billion of trade every day between the U.S. and Mexico. There's 5 million jobs that depend on this trade between the U.S. and Mexico. You name every single state in the United States and they have trade with Mexico. It would be an economic disaster if he does that.
Well, this is really interesting, isn't it? Sandy Rios with you. That was the president saying that security is more important than trade. This from a billionaire businessman who has been concentrating on building the economy of this country. Really, I think, with his priorities right, jumped right over by none other than Mitch McConnell, who, of course, has his priorities right, too. It's his business interests over the safety of the United States. There's no question about it. And then the last one, I think it's Henry Cuellar. He's a congressman from Texas, of course. He's all in with Mitch McConnell. Oh, no, we can't do this. We can't close the border. We can't, we can't do anything, really, based on these Republicans. I don't see Mitch McConnell jumping up there with a solution. Do you? Just always, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. And, of course, we have Mike McCall, who's a congressman from Texas, jumping in on the same thing. In fact, this is the article. Several key Republicans have declared their opposition to President Donald Trump's order to freeze direct aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. House Foreign Relations Committee ranking Republican Mike McCall is one of those, of course, because he traveled down there with the Democratic lead of the committee, Elliott Engel, and they both agree that those organizations down there like USAID, you just can't cut off their money. That would just be terrible. Of course, Mike McCall, I've been telling you since I've been at this mic, has always been horrible on immigration. I still see in my own mind's eye even a picture of Mike McCall working with the Council for American Islamic Relations. What a great partner they were, shaking their hands. A foolish man who has very bad judgment. And by the way, Kirstjen Nielsen was his pick for the head of the Department of Homeland Security, which was something we were all concerned about because Kirstjen has been as bad on this as Mike McCall. It's ironic, isn't it? Yet Kirstjen is saying some hard things, and we just hope and pray she means what she's saying and she's doing everything that she can. But so the Republicans, of course, are undermining the president on everything he's trying to do at the border. So Griff Jenkins gave us a report this morning of the latest, and I thought you should hear it. Here it is.
I'm back on the border, and let me tell you, it is just as intense, if not more, than I've ever seen it since I've been coming down here. We've just found out today that there have been 5 criminals arrested in this Rio Grande Valley. 3 are gang members, 2 of which are the MS-13 identified as, 2 sex offenders, 1 for sex acts with a minor. But when AJ Hall and I left the airport, within just an hour of leaving the airport, driving down to take a look at the border, we got into the many arrests that were going on. Take a look. Not an hour since we've been landed. We came down to the border to see what's going on. You can see already the military helicopter up there, National Guard Air supporting Border Patrol, has just made this apprehension. We're looking through the slats. This is a temporary wall that stops the illegals just about a quarter mile, half a mile to the direction you're looking. This fence stops them from coming into McAllen. This is just indicative of what's showing up hour after day, hour after hour, day after day. It just keeps coming and overwhelming. You can see the manpower that it takes. Obviously, the eyes in the sky helping on this apprehension.
All right, guys, behind me is he goes on. He's more of the same. I mean, I've told you it's like 100,000 just this month. And that's just the ones they're tracking. We know that there are thousands more getting across in areas where they're not even counted. And we also know that they're coming right into our country because they can't stop them. And they're coming from lots of different countries. We know that Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro is now saying, you know, open borders. We need to stop criminalizing illegal immigration. We should do that. He also wants to amnesty the at least 11 million illegals in the United States. I think that's a laughing number. Are you kidding me? They've been saying 11 million for the last, I think since the Bush administration. Are you kidding me? 11 million? I think if we knew how many illegal immigrants are in this country right now, we would be shocked. But of course, Julian Castro is pushing amnesty for whoever is here that's illegal and all the rest of it. And I think certainly most of the Democratic candidates will do that as well. Casey Diaz is a former MS-13, or he's a former gang member. He appeared last night with Laura Ingraham, and this is what he had to say.
It's a real, actual problem that we're having, and it can't be overlooked. I'm like 100% with the president and the choices that he's making to secure that border if need to lock it down. We see that people, you know, with good hearts want to come in here and pursue a dream. But in these caravans, I can tell you from being in meetings in the past, when I was active in the gang, in gang leadership, that there was plans, there was an agenda. And in these caravans, you're gonna see a lot of MS-13, a lot of 18th Street, you're gonna see a lot of gangs. They're gonna try to get in here. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, so from the horse's mouth, we know that's true. And I've told you that they have apprehended several nationalities. A whole group of Chinese had gotten in. A lot of people from the Middle East was reported this week, and you're probably not, I have to say, you know, CNN has even started covering this. You know, and I've had people ask why. Why do you think CNN, U.S. News, I think it was USA Today, did a huge article on it? Now suddenly they're discovering that there's a crisis at the border. Why would they do that? The question is, why would they suddenly start reporting that? And I have a couple of theories. I actually think it's because they have been caught red-handed lying to the American people over the Russian collusion. And they have taken quite a hit in terms of listenership. I think, on MSNBC, the lesbian, I can't think of her name, but anyway, she was Rachel Maddow. She lost over half of her audience after the report came out. They are really bleeding audience. And so I think they're trying to establish their credibility by reporting what's actually true at the border. I think they're trying to reestablish themselves as news organizations. But the second reason that I think they're trying to pivot away from this Mueller report and all the aftermath of that, they want to change the subject. And the third thing is I think that they're going after reporting on this because it was, after all, President Donald Trump's lead campaign promise to secure our border. And so I actually think that they're laying kind of a trap. They're going to try to say in the 2020 election that this is his promise and he didn't keep it. This is a failure. I think that's what I think. Now, Stephen Miller, who is one of the president's, he is the chief. Interestingly enough, Stephen has kind of become the official speechwriter. He's not the only one. But Stephen, before that, was the hardliner on immigration. And he is the hardliner on immigration. He was with Jeff Sessions when Senator Sessions was the leader in the Senate on this issue. Stephen Miller was the staffer who did all the research. So Stephen Miller did an interview in which he said that the White House is going to explore all their executive authorities in existing law that would allow an aggressive crackdown on illegal immigration and legal immigration fraud. He said several authorities already exist in immigration law, including the 1996 Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigration Responsibility Act, and things like systematically reviewing, they are, all the authorities on all the books, the laws that are already there, they're going to do everything they can to rein this thing in. And he gives an example. There are approximately 1 million illegal aliens in the United States with final removal orders that have just ignored them. In many cases, they've been here for several years. So the existing law says that they should receive a significant financial penalty every single day they stay past the order. And so he says, we're going to start clamping down on things like that, things that are on the books that have never been enforced. So they're looking for everything they can do to stem the tide, and we just have to, I don't know, You know, I know you're as frustrated as I am. I'm just sure of it. It's like we're watching our country. We're just losing it. It's like a sieve. It's like watching, you know, something escape that you're trying to keep, like water out of your boat or water in your boat, and you're trying to stop it. And you feel incapable. And that's because we have such horrible people representing us in Congress. I mean, it is stunning to me. I knew they were bad, most of them, except for a handful. Freedom Caucus, they're my champions, I'm telling you. And there are some in the Senate that are my champions also, but they're very few. And they do represent us, and we, at the very least, as American citizens, must take responsibility to get them out of office, to run people against them, to support people, to organize, to give money, to get involved in this process and see what we can do about turning this thing around. Because no country can survive this. You know, no country can survive this. I want to talk to you about something, two other things really important. So I'm going to just do a slap shot at both of them. The president, of course, announced that there was going to be a new health care plan. He's been working with three think tanks over the last several months without people knowing about this. He's doing what an executive would do, exploring all the possibilities. And he was encouraging the Republicans to step right in there and become the leaders on this issue. But, of course, here's the response of Mitch McConnell, clip 11.
We'll not be doing comprehensive in the Senate. We don't have a misunderstanding about that.
Some of my colleagues need to go online, check Amazon, see if they're selling spines at a special discount this week, and grow some guts, and let's tackle one of the problems that moms and dads in America worry about at night when they lie down and can't sleep. And I think the president's absolutely right. It may be lousy politics, but it's good for the American people.
Senator Kennedy, what a treasure. Where has he been, honestly? And, of course, Senator McConnell, not a treasure. So you see the diverging viewpoints in the Senate. I want to tell you something really good that a senator is doing. It happened just yesterday afternoon, and actually AFA's part of this. I did an entire show last Friday on the Southern Poverty Law Center. If you didn't hear it, I hope you go online and listen for that. Because the Southern Poverty Law Center, of course, has fired their founder, Morris Deeds, and their Richard Cohen, who was their spokesperson. And we talked about the corruption and how they have been using their hate list to target conservatives like the American Family Association, Family Research Council, Center for Immigration Policy, Center for Security Policy. There's a long list. And individuals like me, like yours truly, as haters, and put us in great danger and tried to bankrupt us, meanwhile making tons of money hand over fist, $500 million in assets. And so as of yesterday, Senator Tom Cotton has sent a letter to the IRS to investigate the tax-exempt status of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And the letter is really powerful. American Family Association has signed on to that. This is basically what it says. I am writing to urge you to investigate whether the Southern Poverty Law Center should retain its classification as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Recent news reports have confirmed the long-established fact that the SPLC regularly engages in defamation of its political opponents. In fact, the SPLC's defining characteristic is to fundraise off of defamation. And then it goes on to talk about its wealth, how it has accumulated, misspent it. It's a very long letter. And it says the SPLC operates as a tax-sheltered slush fund to enrich its leadership. In addition to failing to have a tax-exempt purpose, the SPLC's peculiar financial situation warrants your attention. It says perhaps the SPLC was founded for a noble purpose and performed some good work, but what is left of the SPLC is no longer operating in a manner consistent with IRS guidelines and applicable law. And so it's a long letter. This is actually, Breitbart is the one that broke this news story over, although many of us knew it was coming, of course. And we'll put this article on our Facebook page so that you can read it, because I just touched on it. Tom Cotton pushes IRS to investigate Southern Poverty Law Center's tax-exempt status. That is really big news. You bet we'll talk more about it. All right, coming up next, something fascinating. The new developments on Facebook that are very concerning. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Betty Sapp, Director of the National Reconnaissance Office. Her department designs, builds, and operates reconnaissance satellites for the U.S. It's a job that requires a great deal of wisdom. Proverbs 2:6 reminds us of the wisdom we receive from God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to bless Director Sapp with the wisdom needed to do her job and serve the people of this country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
The Avocado Apocalypse, that story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There could be an unintended victim of a border shutdown, the beloved avocado. President Trump is threatening to shut down the border so we can stop the invasion of illegals, but critics say it would also stop avocado shipments. That means no more guacamole, no more avocado toast. MSNBC worked themselves into a frenzy. They say most of the avocados sold in grocery stores come from south of the border, and we could run out in 3 weeks' time once the border shut down. Now, I live in a neighborhood populated by hipsters. I can tell you the looming avocado apocalypse is of great concern. There were unconfirmed reports of hoarding in the Trader Joe's. You know, it's one thing for a millennial to run out of guacamole, but the threat of brunch without avocado toast? Well, don't be surprised if you see a rampaging mob of millennials in skinny jeans galloping to their safe space. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Mark Zuckerberg thinks regulation is inevitable, so he's proposing what that regulation should look like. In an op-ed in the Washington Post and on his Facebook page, he outlines what he calls new rules for the internet for four key areas: harmful content, election integrity, privacy, and data portability, saying he wants regulators to set standards about what counts as terrorist propaganda or inappropriate content, or whether an ad is political, so the company doesn't have to set those standards and is not accused of bias. He advocates for a global framework around privacy regulation based on European rules and common standards for users to safely transfer their data away from Facebook.
All right, that was a report that took place just a week or so ago. That is, of course, a story about Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook. How many of you use Facebook? I'm reckoning that most of you do. I'm actually a very limited user of Facebook, but most people really, really love it, and it has grown and grown and grown. It's a great tool, and yet it has become a very dangerous tool in many ways. I think in the last year or so, we've seen a crackdown, for instance, on conservatives on Facebook, People posting things. We've talked about this on our Facebook page. People posting things and thinking that everyone's seeing them while they're not actually seeing them. They've been blocking certain Facebook pages, taking down others. And that's a concern for Americans because we have in our DNA this whole notion that we should have a right to free speech. And we do have it in this country. But the rest of the world has different rules, especially Europe, especially China, Russia in some cases. And so now that Facebook is a global company, what do they do about that? And so when we see Mark Zuckerberg meeting with world leaders, making decisions about what might be the rules for something so powerful as a worldwide social media outlet as Facebook, it will affect each and every one of us. I've asked our next guest to join us because she's an expert on this. Her name is Ashkan Kazarian. She's the director of Cyber Liberties and a legal research fellow at Tech Freedom. And so, Ashkan, first of all, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Sandy.
So, Tech Freedom, tell us what that is. Give us an idea, other than the obvious, the name.
Right. We are a nonpartisan think tank that focuses on tech policy and civil liberties and how they are regulated and connected to everyone in America and around the world through the internet and telecom and all this innovation technology that are in our lives now.
Ashkan, let me ask you a couple of personal things. You grew up in Russia, right?
Yes, that is true. I was born, raised, and went to college in Russia.
Yes, I see that you have your law degree, summa cum laude, from Lomonosov. I'll get it.
Yeah.
Moscow
Not
State University. Okay, and you have your master's of law degree from Yale. You're working on your PhD in law at that same school in Moscow. I shared with you privately that I've always had a fascination with Russia, Ashkan, but it's been a long time since I've been there. But I want to ask you something. You grew up then, I'm guessing, using social media in Russia, right?
That is correct. Around the time I was in college, social media became popular, and I had first row seat to seeing the internet, in Russia at least, to start to be scaled back by laws and government.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Russia, when I was there, it was the beginning of glasnost, you know, the openness and all the talk about, and a lot of Westerners came in and lots of things were changing. And now as things have settled back down, I know from our perspective, it is a bit more restrictive. But I really, really don't know what that means about social media use. So how does it work in Russia when you try to use Facebook or any other social media? How is that controlled, or is it?
Right. There are a few things that Russian government does to control internet in general and platforms. So the first one is there are laws in place that require companies to hold all the data on its users and all the content of the data in Russia. Now, not all companies comply with it, but Russian government will pick losers and shut them down. And as far as I know, the only big network that was shut down and you don't have access to it right now in Russia is LinkedIn. And
LinkedIn.
The professional network. LinkedIn.
Oh, yes. LinkedIn. Oh, okay. All right. That
Microsoft has.
That seems really interesting. What a strange choice, don't you think?
That was a test drive.
Okay.
That was a test drive for the Russian government to see if they can do it and how the public will react. Now, this network is not really used for anything aside from work networking and finding jobs, posting jobs. So it didn't really draw a lot of criticism, but at the same time, big networks like Facebook and the Russian version of Facebook that's called VK, they have been under a lot of pressure and have been taking down content in accordance with some of the laws that Russia has about extremism content, about offending the feelings of different religions, and so on.
Yeah, it's interesting it's going to be interesting for you and I to talk because having grown up in Russia, you don't have the same context of free speech that we would have in America. But you've been here long enough that you probably have a pretty good grasp. I think for one clarification, Ashkan, I think a lot of young Americans think that free speech simply means being able to say anything you want whenever you want. And actually, free speech from our founding fathers was the right to political speech. It was the right to, you know, criticize King George. We had the right to criticize our government. That was the heart of it. And also to express our faith, our lack of it. And so that's really the heart of free speech in the United States. But is that a hard concept for someone coming out of a different kind of system?
That is a very good question, because growing up in a different system, and especially growing up in a democracy that was trying to build itself and honestly is failing, it was a concept that was very fascinating and also important to me. That was partially the reason why I applied to law school here, and I spent 2 years in law school here doing research and then getting my degree, just kind of digging into it and understanding the differences and realizing that that First Amendment that the founding father, that First Amendment, the ideas that the founding fathers had are the reason why so many voices are heard in the United States.
Yeah, you know, and the thing of it is, once people have experienced, I think all of us in our heart of hearts, you know, cry for freedom. I mean, nobody instinctively wants to be repressed in terms of ideas and thoughts. So once the cat has been let out of the bag, as we would say, it's kind of hard to put it back in. So it's interesting. I'm just laying some groundwork, Ashkin, for your expertise on this. So let me ask you just, in the United States, there has been talk, not in recent days, this will contradict what you and I are going to say, but there's been some talk of Facebook declining because younger tech users or internet or social media users are using other things, and it seems it's becoming the older folks' social media. Would you agree with that?
I would say that there are definitely some trends if you look at the younger population of the United States. So when people say that Facebook is dominant and they say that it will not go away, I always laugh, because if you look at just the life cycle of different companies, especially online. Remember when MySpace was dominant and everyone thought it would be dominant forever, or Yahoo? And yeah. Now where are they?
Yeah. Yes, things changed. And one of the things that you guys work on, as I understand it, with your organization at Tech Freedom, is to give space for that. Give space for innovation and let the market, which is there, it's a very American concept too. I hope you know that, is let the market just take it. I mean, if people innovate something new and it overtakes what's existing, that's a good thing. And that's how things get better and better and better. And so, but let's talk now specifically about Facebook, because we opened with that story about Mark Zuckerberg talking with European leaders and making a lot of noise now. He's actually been writing this himself, about how Facebook needs more regulation, which is an odd thing for a founder and CEO of a company to say. So what is that all about, Ashkin? Why is he asking for that, you think?
It is an odd thing, but at the same time, there are a few things that we have to keep in mind. The first one is Facebook has been taking so much criticism over the course of the last 2 years on many fronts and on many issues that concern the platform. And Facebook before that was this liberal darling, and everyone was praising them, praising their innovative spirit. The story was made into a movie. You know, they were on top of the world. And now, while still being a very big company with big revenues, they're getting a lot of criticism. And I think they don't feel very comfortable with that just because they're not used to that. So partially, in my opinion, all of this moves have to do with just PR and damage control and trying to fix the reputation. Now, on the other hand, that another thing we have to keep in mind is that Facebook is big and is dominant. So when they ask for regulation, they have enough lawyers, they have an army of lawyers all across the world, and they have enough money to pay them and consultants to comply with any regulation any government throws at them. This is not true for smaller companies or for startups or for any platform that is up and coming and is trying to innovate. So when they say regulate us, it's kind of confusing, but at the same time, they will be okay if regulation happens.
Yeah, I also have heard even a darker speculation that one of the reasons that Zuckerberg wants this is to codify some of their bad practices. In other words, it's all couched in positive terms, But actually, if he can get governments to go along with this, he's actually getting, in law, the permission to do the things they really want to do. I don't know how you feel about that, but that makes sense to me. I want to ask you about this first thing. Now, he wrote an article in which he laid out what he thought needed to be regulated, at least as a beginning. And he lays out four different things. So let's talk about those. And because this is a hot button, at least it is for me, I have to confess. He says that new regulations are needed to protect society from harmful content. All right, let's talk about that. Protect society from harmful content. What is that to you, from your perspective and your background? How would you spell that out?
Sure. So Zuckerberg defines harmful content in his op-ed as terrorist propaganda, hate speech, and more. Now, when people hear terrorist propaganda, for example, or hate speech, and someone says, you know what, I want to protect you from it, the first knee-jerk reaction of majority of people will probably be, yeah, protect me from that. However, if you look into the history, if you look even at modern day and different countries, harmful content can be defined in so many ways, depending on who's in power. Hate speech can be defined in so many ways. Just before we started, you were talking about the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they identified you guys as a hate speech group. And that's just based on their attitude. And obviously, something like that is very harmful to free speech rights of any citizens of any country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was with in a meeting in D.C. with Google executives about probably, I guess it was last fall. And I just simply raised this question, Ashkin. Why do you feel compelled to regulate speech? Why can't the line be, you know, you don't want videos of murder, you don't want videos of rape and torture, you don't want people encouraging murder of other people or brutality or terrorist acts, but then let the rest of it go. People can discern for themselves what's hate and what isn't. We don't need you to define hate. Let the First Amendment, the United States policy, their founding fathers' intent. I realize this is a worldwide entity, but what is wrong with letting the First Amendment principles guide your regulation? And that was Google, but I'd say the same thing for Facebook. What's the downside of letting people have an open exchange of ideas, Ashkin? Can't we stand that, really? I mean, and who is going to determine? I mean, who's going to make, we know what's happening, and we're going to talk about Europe in a second. But seriously, philosophically, who in the world is going to determine what's hate speech? Unless it's calling for murder or maiming people. That's definitely hate speech.
There is a small problem with that, because when you say to a private company, you should comply with the First Amendment, you know, you should apply First Amendment in your activity, you open up this kind of Pandora box, because with analogies like that, let's say you would tell a baker that he has to treat anyone neutrally, that a baker cannot turn away a same-sex couple if they ask him to bake a cake. That honestly would be the same kind of framework. Another thing is that private companies, when they face this criticism, they react to it way faster than they react to government regulation. And if government regulation would be in place, that would violate First Amendment. Ronald Reagan, when he was president, he vetoed Fairness Doctrine legislation that Democratic Congress back then passed. And this Fairness Doctrine was going to require for every content that was political, let's say, and was criticizing X, to right. have same amount of
equal
content,
time.
Equal time. So
yes.
Let's say your program would have had to have someone on to contradict your views.
Yes,
kind
Ashkin.
Of seeing this ideas of.
Yeah, Ashkin, we have to take a break. Let's take a break, and then we'll come
sure.
back and talk about that. My guest is Ashkin Kazarian. She's the Director of Civil Liberties and Legal Research Fellow at Tech Freedom. And so we have a lot more to talk about, because Mark Zuckerberg is talking about not only regulating hate speech, but also he wants to talk about political involvement of Facebook. It's pretty interesting and extremely controversial. He's asking for regulation, sort of, and we want to talk about it further. And also the involvement of Europe and the very different way they view free speech, for instance, than we do. So we'll come back and talk about that.
For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Janique Stewart, a pro-life speaker with Life Training Institute, was invited to speak at an abortion debate at Cornell University, but she was disinvited when the organizers realized she believed in the biblical teachings on sexuality and marriage. After Cornell University extended the invitation and Janique accepted, she later received a phone call from the university saying they were rescinding the invitation specifically because she was outspoken about sexual activity being reserved for marriage and that God defined natural marriage as the union between one man and one woman. Her belief in the word of Christ got her disinvited.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Did you know your family will have a better life if you go to church regularly? Sociologist Robert Putnam's research shows kids who go to church take tougher courses, get higher grades, and are less likely to drop out of school. He also notes that church-going kids have better relationships with their family. There's nothing magical about a church building, but when people connect with God in worship and learn truth from the Bible, they begin a journey to become the person God created them to be. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. With the American male under constant attack, the need of the hour is to raise a generation of young men who know what biblical masculinity looks like. That's why I've written my new book, The Boy to Man Book. One father who was reading this book to his son posted this on his Facebook page. Tuesday night, we read our nightly chapter and then we prayed. In our prayer, we asked God specifically for two things, requests that I believed only God could meet. Within 24 hours of our prayer, God not only answered one of those big requests, but he answered both. When I reached for the book and reminded him of what we prayed for just the night before, in his eyes, I could see the realization that Jesus is not some distant star. He hears our prayers, and he is a very real Savior. Praise God for that.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A long-running and increasingly genocidal campaign to kill and drive out Christians is underway in Nigeria, with grave implications for Africa, Europe, and our own country. A recent ruling by the Economic Council of West Africa confirmed what has long been evident yet not acknowledged. It's not just jihadists like Boko Haram and Fulani tribesmen responsible for persecuting Christians. Islamists in the Nigerian government at the federal, state, and local levels are complicit as well. Today, this deadly cancer is metastasizing. The Islamic State is relocating from its vanquished Middle East caliphate to a potentially far more powerful and dangerous one in Nigeria. The Trump administration has been very robust concerning the duty of every nation to protect religious freedom. It must now hold accountable persecutors in Nigeria and the Lake Chad region and create real costs for their crimes against humanity. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We're talking about these proposed regulations by Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg. He's been traveling in Europe, and he's partnered actually with France for the next 6 months to kind of work out how to handle online hate speech. Now, that might sound good, but I'm telling you, makes me nervous because I know how Europe handles so-called hate speech. In fact, there's a great article called Telling Europeans What to Think by Judith Bergman, and she talks about one of the initiatives that they're starting is it's a guide to Europeans onto the path of proper thinking. And it wants to translate this kind of code to Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Mozilla. It was signed in 2018. It's called a Code of Conduct on Countering Illegal Online Hate Speech Online. And then, of course, this article goes on to talk about how Marie Le Pen posted a tweet condemning the Islamic State, including photos of their murdered victims. And for this, she was charged with the crime of disseminating violent images and ordered by a court to undergo psychiatric evaluations to determine whether she's capable of understanding remarks and answering questions. That is a tiny microcosm of that article. But I just want to give you an idea of what's happening with European speech codes. Ironic, my guest is Ashkan Kazarian, and of course she's with Tech Freedom. She's an expert, an attorney and an expert on the Internet. She is, by the way, a fellow at the Federalist Society on Internet. So that's Ashkan's background on this. Ashkan, it's ironic to me. I was reading that, and I've already told you that I have a fascination with Russia. This whole business about Russian collusion has been very interesting. I know all about, of course, the dark side of Russian politics and the KGB and all of that, but the Russian people are some wonderful people. The history is rich and fascinating. That being said, I don't probably need to tell you about the gulags, about Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and the desperate attempt to try to speak freely during the time of Soviet Russia and the tremendous punishments. And that's why that story coming out of Europe about Marie Le Pen, how, regardless of how you feel about her, being charged, you know, for posting bad things about the Islamic State, that's concerning. It reminds us of those re-education camps that were in place in Soviet Russia. I wonder how it strikes you.
You're absolutely right, Sandy. European laws currently, and even further where they want to take their regulation of speech, both online and offline, is not really creating any free speech and is only hurting the society. Things like that and their regulations, for example, will limit the way journalists can report on the Syrian war. They can limit just the conversation online about censorship of women of color in Egypt, let's say. You know, there are so many things that are getting attacked and taken down because people can play the system.
Yes, and I think I'm going to go back to our earlier discussion because you and I were having a bit of a back and forth about who would regulate hate speech, and I was suggesting a First Amendment is a good standard. But let me clarify that to you, because you're right that you would not want to put on a private company. A private company should have the freedom, at least under our system, to set their own regulations. Of course, we actually don't have that in this country. We are forcing private companies, we were at least under the Obama administration, to do things that they should not have been forced to do. But in a perfect world and under our system, we don't do that. I think probably in America, we are thinking more now that Facebook and entities like that are more what we would call public utilities now. Now, I don't think they've been declared such legally, but that would like the phone company. Like, what if the phone company didn't like Democrats? So no Democrats could have a phone, or they would be, you know, their numbers would be harder to find or something like that. That's kind of the way we're viewing, I think more and more Americans are viewing the fact that Facebook should not be allowed to single out people because they disagree with how they feel on certain subjects and shut them out under the guise of hate speech. I'm sure you understand that complexity more than I do. So I'd love your comment
right
on that.
So let's see. Let's imagine the next president of the United States being someone your listeners wouldn't like, whoever that might be, let's say Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, let's say Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is the captain of the ship that can define what is hateful and what is harmful. He and his power, both executive and the way he can persuade legislative power, the way he can persuade states, would affect this huge infrastructure that is the Internet. So if we make Internet a public utility, we put government on top of it, and then government can basically do whatever they want with it. There's very little you can do. And maybe right now you would be okay with it because someone who is the captain right now is the person you agree with. But you always have to think through, like, the next step, you know? What if someone comes along who you absolutely don't agree with? That's why we have a First Amendment. That's why we have this very, you know, enormous infrastructure online that helps us have a dialogue and everyone has a place to speak.
Yeah, but except the pushback on that, Ashkin, is that isn't actually the way it works here. Now, I know I'm speaking of America, and we need to go broader than that, and we will. But just let me go back to that, because in all the centuries that we've been in existence, I guess probably more like decades since we've had some kind of electronic or social media or public utilities, nobody's done that. I mean, we haven't cut off the electricity of people we don't like, or we don't have kings. Our presidents are ruled, governed by our laws. So that's really not been an issue. But you know what? Let the public utility thing, that's an issue for another day. So we won't take that further. But I am very concerned. And how do you see? I think the First Amendment is a great model internationally. Not that you adapt it and you say we're going to use the First Amendment, because that's a uniquely American concept or law. But the whole idea, let people say what they want to say. Let them go. Let them say what they want to say. Just don't let them threaten each other with murder and death. I don't see a problem with that. Do you?
I would agree. I think the First Amendment is a great model for the world to have, and I think it has proven to create a democracy because everyone had a place to speak, and the ideas were battled. People disagreed with each other, and, you know, you came to a compromise. You keep moving the country forward. And unfortunately, in a lot of countries of the world, that's not the case.
Boy, I know. And so far, there have been different rules in different countries, as you described in your home country of Russia. Let's talk about the political piece of this, because Mark Zuckerberg also then, here's the storyline. The storyline is that Facebook, you know, Russian bots, you know, interfered with the American elections. And that Facebook has allowed political misinformation through their outlet, and therefore Facebook has to police a political speech. They've got to make sure candidates are really who they say they are. Ashkin, I think they should just stay out of that and let the people of the world decide for themselves. You know, it's like you finally figure out who you can trust and who you can't. People are not that stupid. I mean, some are, but you can't control that. I think just let it go. Let the political speech fly and let people learn to discern what's true and what isn't. I'd like to know what you think about that.
I would say you and I agree on that. I think platforms obviously should take some steps if they want to, because then people will go to them for information on political issues too. But that's the relationship between the platform and the user. And the platform does the best it can to attract the users. This is kind of the free market idea that, you know, we were talking about in the beginning, where you said in America people can choose for themselves, and there's this idea of free market that kind of was central to creating this country. And that applies here. If people want to go to Twitter to get their news, Twitter has to, you know, do whatever they want to get the most clicks and likes. At the same time, the election integrity has been such a hot button issue and kind of, for some reason, a red button that people press and say, no, this is where we're going to regulate. And it is unfortunate because even though there are some things to work on to make this experience better for everyone, it shouldn't be government facilitated.
Oh, no, I don't think so either. That creeps me out, to be honest with you. I was just looking at this picture of Zuckerberg sitting down with Macron and this six-month project they have, and political speech is one of the things they're addressing, and France is getting ready for another election. And my mind went to the Yellow Jackets, who are, protesting in the streets. They're the middle-class working people who are objecting to the high gas prices and all the other regulations have some really actually very sad, concerning stories about how their own personal income has been so detrimentally affected. So when I see Macron, who has been pretty callous to those complaints, working with Zuckerberg on political campaigns on Facebook, that makes me nervous. I don't see how Facebook should have anything to say about what political ads go on Facebook. So I just push back on that if you see it differently, Ashkin.
No, I wouldn't. I think having a free discussion online is what I've been, you know, saying over and over again. So I absolutely agree. Platforms should be left alone, and they should, as a private company, operate in any way they find fitting.
All right, so then he is also talking about Zuckerberg in his public statement and in the article that he recently wrote. He thinks that the, I guess he's referring to his own entity, Facebook, has endorsed what's called the global framework. It's called the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation. Why don't you tell us what that is and what you think about that?
Right. The GDPR is a law that was passed in the European Union and went into effect last May that regulates what they say privacy. It's not true. GDPR actually regulates data governance. It says how users can get access to data. It tells platforms and, you know, just in general, internet entities, how they are supposed to restructure the way they even design their platforms to comply. So it's easier for people to access whatever information there is. There was that whole debacle with the right to be forgotten. And there was this case about a man in Spain who wanted the information about his bankruptcy to be deleted off the internet. And now, forever, he will be just known as the guy from Spain who was bankrupt. You know, it really backfired. Yeah. But GDPR is this privacy, what they call framework, and they're very proud of it. But what it truly does is stifle innovation. It cements the kind of big companies' dominance in the market. And it really, you know, it kind of limits the websites people in Europe can access. When you're in Europe, LA Times doesn't want to bother and comply with GDPR. And so you can read LA Times if you're in Paris, let's say.
You cannot?
No. No,
you can't.
LA Times? No, you can't. LA Times said, you know what? We don't have the lawyers to pay to comply. This is ridiculous. And yeah, you can access LA Times if you're in Europe. And things like that happen. And if you look at Europe, the way this regulation has panned out, it's not an accident. European governments as a whole and separately have always been way more restrictive on innovation. And that's why America is the leading technology country in the world and not Europe. They barely have any tech companies that have play any major role in the world. And all they do is regulate American companies because, you know, they're envious of the revenue and the power they have.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even mention Angela Merkel and the Germany's institution of these huge fines on tech companies for allowing certain kinds of speech to go online. And it's amazing. And it's so foreign to us, Ashkin, in America to have that kind of regulation. So we only have a minute or so left here. So let me ask you, isn't it better? Is it not better to have these major tech companies or social media companies have individual regulations for different areas of the world? I don't think it can be monolithic. Do you?
Unfortunately, I think the reality is that it can't be monolithic anymore because the world politically is so different and the countries are at a different place of their development. However, when a bad regulation happens, let's say in China, and a company would comply with it, other countries would say, hey, if China made them do it, I can too. So it has a domino effect that we should be very afraid of.
Ashkin, it's been a pleasure. Really nice to talk to you. And hopefully we can talk again. Ashkin Kazarian with Tech Freedom. You can see Tech Freedom online if you want more information about it, all you techies. And Ashkin, it's great to have your contribution in this country. And I hope you will remember, you know, the great gift freedom is as you go back to your home country, which I share a love for too. Ashkin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.